exciting.
Hello, and welcome everybody to this week's episode of PDGA Radio. It is April 12th.
Got an action-packed show for you today. By the way, it's Grant Zellner and Jennifer Allen with several guests lined up. This is the first time, I think, Jennifer, at least in a while, we've had more than one guest step in. But that's just because this week is going to be such an incredible week with the Champions Cup 48 hours away and counting. First up, we've got our representatives from Bushnell, the presenting sponsor of the Champions Cup. And then a little bit later on in the episode, Robert Leonard, the tournament director for the Champions Cup, is going to be stepping in and letting us know all the things we can expect from this upcoming tournament. But first things first, let's talk to our friends from Bushnell, talking about Michael Sizemore and Carlos Lozano here on PDGA Radio. Joining us in the PDGA Radio studio from none other than Bushnell, Michael Sizemore and Carlos Lozano run product and marketing there at Bushnell, and obviously have a busy week in store for themselves because, as we have been so proud to talk about this for many months now, Bushnell, the presenting sponsor of the inaugural Champions Cup. Michael and Carlos, first of all, thanks for joining us during your busy time right now.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Now, let's back up just a little bit because this is so unique. Bushnell is obviously one of the more visible brands in the disc golf world, but Bushnell also is not what you might call a disc golf company. Bushnell is a company that makes a variety of products in a variety of other sort of passions and interests and hobby areas. So can you talk to us about how this relationship came to be between Bushnell and just the world of disc golf in general?
Yeah, sure. So I think Bushnell has always made great outdoors products. But for disc golf specifically, I'll take a little bit of the credit for kicking the ball, but for getting that started. But I think Carlos really took it the rest of the way. So I joined about 3 years ago, and I've been playing disc golf for 15 years. And I've always wanted to use a rangefinder for disc golf. I think it's been more and more popular over the last 10 years. And so I tried a couple times to knock on that door and see who was interested on our team. And I got a couple no's, but kept on knocking. And eventually in late 2019, I made my pitch to Carlos, who handles marketing for our team, and he thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. So at that point, I was maybe 6 months into the role or something. Because I moved into this role from a kind of shared service over creative department, creative guy role. And one of the things moving into this that we wanted to do in conversations with the team was, you know, be able to make sure the brand is taking advantage of kind of its breadth of product. So like, how do we make sure we're, you know, is there any opportunity for someone, for us to have a product or serve another activity or pursuit that we're not doing right now? And Michael heard that immediately. He was like, I've got one. And so, you know, like, okay, let's talk about it. And it just made sense with that product. You know, we have already had that sort of proven out, with golf, ball golf, and, you know, that's its own separate, thing. And this kind of had its own requirements. It was something we had to look at from a new perspective, and him having that, you know, 15 years of experience in it and seeing what this product needed to do specifically for disc golf was exciting. So being able to get that going and see how the response was, which was great out of the gate. And I think people have been waiting for something like this for a while. So I think it was just the right timing.
I know I personally have been waiting for it for a long time. My depth perception had, you know, slowly been getting worse and worse. I've been saying for years, you know, before you guys stepped in, that this is so needed. If I knew how far this was, I could, you know, confidently throw what I needed to throw. And I was one of many who was very excited that you guys stepped into disc golf.
Yeah. And in hindsight, I think it seems more obvious than it was at the time. There were some pro players using rangefinders over the past mm-hmm. couple of years. But when I first I hacked one of our rangefinders to range and feet and started taking it out to leagues and out to tournaments with me, and I got some funny looks initially. There was a bit of a culture barrier to overcome where, mm-hmm. you know, I'm at my best, I'm a 930, 940 rated AM. And I got some looks like, you're using a rangefinder? You know, how good are you again? but it made such a difference to my game just personally. Mm-hmm. And I've got four kids and I don't get out on the course as much as I would like. So if it could, you know, improve my experience a little bit, make that one weekend trip a little bit better, it was absolutely worth it.
Well, and more, you know, Jen, you're kind of a unofficial or maybe official, I don't know, brand ambassador from the standpoint of when you show up on coverage, like you have it down. I get it out. I get
every
it out.
Time.
I take my measurement. I put it up. I grab my, like, you know, it's not something that necessarily slows the game down. It's not something that necessarily is clunky or is anything like that. It's a very quick, especially now that you've got it as part of your routine, Jen. I mean, I think other players, pro to be honest, but also certainly amateurs, can sort of learn from you. Like, this is how I utilize this tool in a way that doesn't take away from the experience. It only enhances the experience, and it doesn't take away from the people I'm playing with by making me a slow player or anything. This actually makes me a faster player because it helps me make that decision. So, you know, there's certainly, I agree with what you just said a minute ago, Michael, about there's almost a culture barrier because anything new, you know, takes an adjustment, but we're already seeing how this is a very positive kind of a tool. I mean, it almost makes me wonder, are there other tools or other product variants and stuff on the horizon that are also disc golf specific? I realize you might not be able to say anything more than yes or no, but I mean, is there more to come?
Yeah, there's certainly more to come. We've gotten a lot of great feedback from players. So we've got some more on the horizon. We've got some, I think, kind of accessories that'll make everyone's life a little bit easier coming up soon. And we've got a little bit more exciting or advanced products coming up in the next 12 to 18 months. So we're still actively getting feedback, still early in development, but we've seen a really good response from disc golf, and there's a ton more we can do. There's a lot.
I know, Grant, when you were talking about like slowing down the game or not, I think, you know, as just respect as your card mates, when before it's even my turn, I've already usually got it out and guessed the distance with the rangefinder and try to get everything dialed in before it's even my turn. And I think if you're respectful and thoughtful to kind of get ahead of yourself like that, and sometimes I'll even stand back behind the player throwing and measure from there, then measure to my disc, do that math in my head, mm-hmm. you know, so we don't slow anyone down. And I think if you kind of proactively do that, then it works extremely easily into the game.
Yeah, I know. I myself use it for intermediate targets too. If I know how far a certain tree is, for example, I'm not necessarily only using it to measure distance to basket. I'm using it to measure some other things as well. And that's always helpful. I'm like you, Michael. I've, you know, got kiddos. And so I don't get the luxury of playing multiple practice rounds before maybe a tournament round every single time. So having another way to dial in distances and angles and things like that really is really certainly helpful. So, So Bushnell breaks in, for lack of a better term, to the disc golf kind of market. What was the year you said that things first began to happen? Was it 20?
So it was actually right at the beginning of 2020.
Perfect timing.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, in hindsight, right?
Yeah.
We started talking to the Pro Tour and to other folks in early 2020. Had some things lined up. Emporia is close by us in Kansas City, so we were going to do some things at the DDO out there. And then COVID hit and shut everything down. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, I thought we were done. I thought that was it. So I was a little worried, but we worked with the Pro Tour and some other folks to get some marketing efforts done, some trial runs done. during lockdown and coming out of lockdowns. And we came out with the first version of the rangefinder in September of 2020.
Okay, the first version of the disc golf specific that measures in feet or meters, correct, however you choose to set it and all of, correct, that kind of thing. So that was, say again, when was that out?
That was September of 2020.
September of 2020. So we're sitting here now doing quick math. What is that, 18 months?
Yeah.
18 months in. How have sales and interest and things like that progressed? Is it the way you expected it to be? Is it a different curve than you maybe expected?
It's been very good. I mean, the interest from day one has been great. The sales ticked up over time, and there's a lot more that goes into the sales numbers than just having good interest or demand in the market. It's setting up our organization with the right sales channels, getting our marketing on point, and figuring out what does our brand stand for in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the first year sales, we've finally had our first full 12 months, our first full season. So we can kind of stand back and look at what does this market look like for us? And it's been great. It was a great first season. And if we can grow on top of that, this next season, it'll be even better.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has been just still continuing to explain how this can apply to your different strategies. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a little bit, you know, because we started at a pro level, which made sense to kind of get that for us, understand how many different ways you can use the product. Because all it's really providing is data. It's just distance data to whatever you end up pointing it at.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that I think the first assumption is it has to deal with long range, and it doesn't. Like, this thing is what, 5 feet, 7 feet? It's,
yeah, 15 feet.
15 feet, yeah. 15 feet.
1,000.
I think there's a lot of like, when would this benefit me? I think that's the thing we've been addressing and trying to frame around over the past, 18 months and try to figure out how do we make this not just valuable to pros, because pros immediately see it and get it. But I think everybody else, like with Michael's example, it's like, why are you using that? You're not good enough to use that. I'm new to this, and I see it as way more of a benefit for me to understand how I'm improving, but also like the way like that data kind of comes into play, especially for shorter shots or anything where it's like, which the right disc, because I'm not good enough to control something, but I know where they go, and it kind of gives me a shortcut to understanding for disc selection. So I think that's the thing, just getting more people talking about the product is probably our next step. And getting more like, how do you use this? It's not just a long range. It's not just a distance device for far distances. So that's kind of been the interesting learning and seeing how people are using it.
Yeah. Even just locally.
I actually use it with, like you're saying, for my putting or jump putting range. You know, am I 125 feet out? Well, then I might not want to jump putt. Am I at a rock, you know, that mid-range distance? Or, and so I usually very rarely use it off the tee. It's once I'm off the tee and approaching the basket, like you said, is when I personally think it's definitely most effective.
It's funny you say that. I was just about to mention my friend here locally who I play with uses it all the time for putts and even within 100 feet. And personally,
yep,
I mostly use it outside 100 feet.
Interesting.
And so I got to see him pick it up and use it inside 100 feet. I'm like, what are you doing? What is your thought process here?
Yeah.
So part of this is just maturing and getting outside our own heads and understanding how everybody uses it.
Well, and disc golf grew so much during COVID. And so we have all these new players. So what a better time. I mean, there's not a better time, I should say, to bring in a new brand. Like you said, at first, all the golfers who played forever, like, what is this? We don't need this. But now we have so many people who have never played disc golf, and you guys are there, a founded brand already almost to them starting out. So hopefully next year's sales will be, you know, a lot better because we have these people who don't know that this wasn't, you know, something that everyone's used for 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now why Champions Cup? What genesis? I just turned that into a verb. What created that opportunity, that relationship where this is sort of something of, I don't know, something of a breakout maybe in terms of presenting sponsorship of a major disc golf event. And I emphasize the word major because this is a major. But, you know, what was it that made these particular stars align?
It was, I think, us having a good response initially. So really thanks to everyone who gave us good feedback, bought the product early on. those are the people that made this possible. Because it's a little bit crazy if you think about it. A year, we started this in early 2020. Basically 12 months after that, we said yes to sponsoring a major. And that's a little bit insane when you look back.
That's pretty quick.
So obviously the response was great. Really, I think they announced the major in early 2021. Mm-hmm. I forget the exact timing. And then Robert Leonard, the tournament director, reached out to me to talk about sponsorship pretty early that year. And for us, it was the perfect timing. It, like you said, the stars aligned. Because internally, everyone was excited about the response initially. Secretly, we were working on the Edge rangefinder and the disc jockey, working on that with UDisc. So we had some pretty exciting products lined up to come out. And we all kind of rallied around this opportunity and said yes to it. By far the biggest thing we've done in disc golf, especially on the event side. It was a big deal for us internally.
Yeah, I think we saw it as an opportunity to learn a lot about how that event actually comes into, like, how does it exist? How does it come to be? You know, what does it take to get one of those off the ground? And, you know, we kind of a few months ago started using our new sort of like tagline that we're in messaging for Bushnell Disc, which is push the sport.
All right.
And with that, we wanted to be able to, you know, it's an interesting way to kind of not give back, but be a part of it 100%. So we've been really involved as much as we can. And with this, and whenever we visited, what was that? October
of
last year. And tried to understand, you know, what does the course look like? What is this gonna, where can we help? And how do we not only, you know, make this a great experience for the players, but also for spectators, which is a new and growing thing to consider in the sport. And, you know, how do we help there? And how do we make that experience more interesting there? So there was just a big opportunity to be a part of it. It's great to be associated with it, but also just to get in there and kind of understand how these things come to be and how do we keep improving it?
Yeah, and it's a little bit personal on my side because I started a disc golf club in college and went to collegiate nationals back in 2010, 2011, 2009. And that was such a phenomenal experience, but the way that we kind of stood it up and the growth of the sport at that time wasn't quite sufficient to keep carrying over. And so I saw what it could be, but it just didn't quite make it to the next level where I think, you know, college disc golf is starting to get to today. And so one of my big pushes for what we're doing at Bushnell is to do something very sustainably and grow the infrastructure as we're trying to grow the sport. And so the idea of a fourth major just makes all the sense in the world, I think. And I really wanted to, I think it makes sense to align our interests with the PGA's interests. You know, we want this event to be great because we're very invested in it. And if we make this event great, it's going to set us up for a great modern era of four major mm-hmm. disc golf season. And that's, I think that's going to set us as a whole industry and sport up for success in the future.
So what can we expect this week from Bushnell? Maybe that's a question specifically for those that are able to be at the event in person, or maybe there's another answer beyond that. What can we expect coming up? Tease us, if you will.
So, you know, I think we're going to have a few different things going on. We're going to have to get some education on there because we did get, for the people who are able to go, we're providing for, what was it, the VIP tickets and a few other different tickets. And we'll be there with binoculars as well. But we're trying to promote the idea of, you know, getting different glass on the course. And if spectators want to see more things, we happen to have other products that help do that too.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, we it's especially with the different environments and the course layouts and what's going on, you can't always get close. So, and I'm trying to see how that works and how that, you know, changes the spectator experience. So that'll be interesting to see how that works. And then
I think this course is especially forcing the evolving idea of how you spectate disc golf.
Sure.
Whereas 10 years ago, you followed a card all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
With the numbers of spectators that we're seeing, it's not feasible even on some open courses to do that. And especially at W.R. Jackson, fantastic course, fantastic property, but it is It is a very tight, heavily wooded course, mm-hmm. and you can't fit people like that. So when we visited in October, we created what was kind of a joke at first of Bushnell Boulevard, which is a series of paths that run adjacent to holes and along certain holes, but don't actually interfere with the gameplay. So that if you've got a Bushnell Boulevard pass, you can set up along different holes, set up in good viewing areas without affecting any players playing through their event. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got your binoculars in a good viewing area, you can have a great viewing experience, even in wooded disc golf. So this is a little bit of part of the evolution of spectators in disc golf, and hopefully the folks on site enjoy it.
I'm sure everyone who loves to play the wooded courses will be very excited if this works, because I think they were, you know, a little fearful that a lot of our big events, because of spectators, are going to go to more open courses. So if this works, you're going to have a lot of happy pros.
Yeah. No, it'll be, I think the Bushnell Boulevard experiment will be, we're even marking it. I think we have to go check and make sure that's all getting, we'll be there a little bit earlier, but we're trying to put the little areas that mark, this is a good spot to use a bino right here, and then see, and see if we can help people out for that and find that. And then, we'll be, I think, just kind of there, we'll have obviously the rangefinders there and helping explain that to anybody who needs from the spectator side and is interested in picking up one of those products. And then
we'll have our big new tent with the great new graphics. We'll have all the products there. And this will drop on Tuesday, right? So by the time this comes out, we'll have been there for a couple days already. So it'll be a full week effort for us.
Very cool. And I like the forethought of not only spectating in a different way, but also spectating from the standpoint of finding positionings on the course where you're not just watching one group at a time. You know, to your left is a fairway on one particular hole. To your right is the green area, the circle area for a completely different hole. And right over there is the tee shot for a complete, where you're going to be standing in one place and seeing 3, 4, 5 groups from one vantage point. Yeah, that's going to take some new tools. So what you referred to them as binos, I think, a second ago.
Binoculars, sorry.
No, I know. I like bino. I feel like I feel like a cool kid, referring to it as binos. Or a minute before that, you just said getting glass. You said getting glass on the course.
He's been here a while.
Yeah. That's
you gotta get. We gotta get up.
We gotta start. Bingo. Yeah, we gotta just. That's gonna be right up there with Heiser Bomb or or Annie here before too long.
But the Masters kicking off tomorrow there in Augusta. Does Bushnell? Do you have a great timing of these lining up? That are you guys gonna be able to go over to the Masters and watch Tiger get back out on the course and then just come over and watch all of us? Or does Bushnell not get into the traditional golf as much?
We've done Masters binos, binoculars before with that classic green.
Yeah. And that's where we have Bushnell Golf is sort of a separate brand under the brand. Mm-hmm. So we have a team that manages that whole thing. And where we're doing the Bushnell disc side. So that's where there's a little bit of separation there. But, if I could get away from my family for 2 weeks straight, then definitely.
Yes. But, I'm out for a week around Easter. So I'm already pushing the limits.
Yeah. Yeah. You and me both, all of us. So it sounds like there'll be lots of glass there in Augusta over the course of the middle half of April.
There should be. I also want to point out a few other things. We kind of copied the parts of tournaments that we saw from USDGC. Mm-hmm. They had a great spectator course, mm-hmm. Which I really loved. As someone there who was spectating a little bit, it was fantastic to have that. We don't have quite the property that they do there, but we're going to set up some baskets near tournament central away from the course, so that if anyone has some time to kill, wants to buy some discs from some of the vendors there and try out a rangefinder, they can play the spectator course, and we'll have baskets that are set up just like the professional event baskets.
Nice.
So a little bit of a kind of next level spectator experience for that.
Do you want to talk through the basket stuff we did?
I do.
Yeah. So we highlighting some of the spectator side, but there's also some stuff we're trying out on course. specifically for the players. So I'll let the.
So we're trying out a reflective Bushnell box. So on the top of the basket, we're going to replace the flag with a reflective box that makes it much easier to range. So the rangefinder shoots out a laser and receives the laser back.
Right.
And if you have a lot of heavy brush in between you and the basket, it can be a challenge to get the laser all the way to the basket and back.
Mm-hmm.
So this is in a heavily wooded course like this. This is one of those pieces that we're trying out. So it's easier to see for the players where the basket is, easier for the players to get a range, and hopefully easier for the spectators to recognize where those baskets are located.
Will it help my shaky hand when I'm on there?
It will help your shaky hand.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely a user skill component to utilizing one of these Bushnell rangefinders. So that's interesting, a way to mitigate that, because I mean, I've struggled with that, especially on windy days, mm-hmm. with branches and leaves and things moving in and out of my line of sight. So it's, you said it's going to be a reflective box, some kind of a,
so it looks better than it sounds. I can't wait to show you all when we get there at the event, but yeah, it's not very large, just large enough to get a good laser signal off of it. We don't want to impede or kind of be an eyesore in any way. So we try to do it in a somewhat subdued professional manner, but it's going to be a little bit different, a little bit unique.
Yeah. Yeah. We already had a lot of conversation internally whenever we were trying to think of the idea and hoping to actually we're fine if there's continued conversation around it, but excited to see how it does. And if I believe we tested it and it should help out for that. So,
yeah. So let us know what you think,
Jay. For sure.
Okay. I know definitely there's a few times when you bounce off these new baskets with no number plate on top that I missed the number plate. So if there's a little box that's going to stop one from like trampolining off my putt, then yeah. I welcome the box.
Yeah.
And it's the same reflective material that we use to test the rangefinder. So yeah, we tried to make this with the best materials that we could.
Awesome.
Well, gents, before we let you go, because we know how incredibly busy you are, how can those listening follow along with Bushnell, follow along with the product line, learn about the products? How can they communicate with you? Just all things, I assume, internet and otherwise.
Yeah. So right now, actually, perfect question. We just actually launched about a week ago our new Instagram profile for Bushnell Disc, which is at Bushnell _disc. And just wanted to develop that since we've had more and more conversations, going to more events. So we should have a lot of stuff from Champions Cup live going on there and just different posts. So mm-hmm. that'll be a good place to check out. And then the website as well.
Yeah, bushnell.com/discgolf. It's kind of our disc golf landing page. So it has our current products. It will have any new products we have coming out. So stay tuned to that for everything we've got.
All right. And as you said, Bushnell Disc is separate from Bushnell Golf.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So making that clear.
Two different conversations. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep. Yeah. So the Bushnell _disc would be where you want to go to see any of that or from a social perspective. Mm-hmm. And bushnell.com/discgolf.
And what about for all the players out there, the amateurs and pros? Is there a certain tag that you would like them to use to let you know that they are loving your product?
Yeah. For the tags, like go ahead and tag, obviously mention the account bushnell_disc if you can. And then hashtag push the sport is what we're trying to do. So just continuing to see how people are using the product, what they're trying to do for even themselves or even their local leagues, whatever's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we have hopefully some stuff interesting in the future that we can continue to help with that as well.
Yeah. And we love seeing how everybody else uses it, not just us. So yeah. Tag us there, start a conversation there. And then if you're coming out to any events in the future, Ledgestone, Worlds, KC Wide Open, maybe for the locals. Come say hi. Don't be afraid. We really appreciate all the support to date that's gotten us here, because that's what it's taken to get us here, and looking forward to the future.
All right. Hashtag push the sport when you post on your social media about your experience using Bushnell's rangefinder and or I suppose other Bushnell products with relation to disc golf, like those binos.
Yeah. Have a good glass. It'll help you out. Yeah.
I need one of those for the ball games.
Yeah. Get some good glass out there. Guys, thanks again for giving us a little bit of your time during this busy week. We'll see you out there. And thanks for elevating the game. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael and Carlos.
Joining us now on PDGA Radio with specific insight you can't get anywhere else regarding this week's Champions Cup, none other than the tournament director, Robert Leonard, a member also of staff at the PDGA, and he has been working hard setting up this course for the first major of the year, at least the first pro major of the year. Robert, first of all, knowing how busy you are this week, thanks for joining us. And second of all, what have you been working on in these last moments of preparation before the Champions Cup?
Yeah, thanks, Grant. Thanks, Jennifer, for having me on this morning and promoting the event. As we're, you know, now 6-7 days out, I'm leaving town. I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's about 5.5 hours north of Appling. And so I'm right now today, I'm packing and planning to hit the road tomorrow. But really, this last week has been a lot of logistical meetings. We had a Zoom call with our volunteers Wednesday evening, just kind of talking about what they can expect and, you know, do's and don'ts, right? Like I remember I was working the 2012 World Championships and a spotter caught one of Val Jenkins' shots. You know, so it was like one of those, like, don't catch a disc. And yes, I have seen that happen. You know, so just a lot of those things, right? And then we also had a, you know, we've got a pool of UDisc volunteers for our UDisc stats and volunteers. So we had a training call with them Wednesday night. So it's been a lot of that planning. We had some pretty substantial rain. If you've been following the Masters, you know, we've had a lot of rain this week. The course actually flooded on yesterday, which is Thursday. And I actually had to send an email out to players that are already in town and be like, hey, guys, you can't play today. The course is dangerous, while our staff got out there and worked all that out. So a lot of logistical things, just kind of tie in some loose ends. And like I said, getting ready to hit the road tomorrow.
So real quick, one thing just to be clear for our listeners, we're chatting with you right now in real time on Friday, April 8th. Obviously, the episode will drop here in a few more days on Tuesday the 12th. So that might give everyone listening an even clearer picture as to the timeline that you are working with in terms of setting the course up and getting all of the people sort of in line and ready to go. Now, when it comes to the course itself, because I don't see any reason why we shouldn't dive right into the details. You know, a lot of people maybe listening right now have seen, if maybe they've played W.R. Jackson, but at least they've probably seen it on YouTube and like post-produced coverage of tournaments from years past, like the Hall of Fame tournament and stuff like that. Is there anything about the course as it's being set up for the Champions Cup that's going to stand out as being a little bit different or that's has changed or anything like that?
Yes and no. For it depends on kind of what division you're playing, right? So if you're watching or playing in the MPO division, there is not a single tee pad difference. There is, I mean, a pin hasn't moved an inch. It is going to be exactly the same since the last big event there was 2018 Hall of Fame Classic. You know, if you 2017 Worlds, you know, the course is a little different. So basically the most recent event, 2018 Hall of Fame Classic, it's pretty much spot on for there. There are some, we did make some rule changes on hole 9 and hole 18. Both of those holes have, there's a creek and a ditch that pretty much runs throughout the property. And 9 and 18 are the two places where you have to, you start on one side of it and you have to throw across it. Well, like most ditches and things like that, it's a pretty substantial drop all the way down to the ditch and then a pretty substantial climb leaving it, right? And when people ask me for tips about being a tournament director, I kind of always lean on this one line, control uncontrollables, right? I can't control if a player throws in that ditch. I can't control bad rolls to that ditch, but I can control what I make the player do after that occurs. I do not like, even with the new OB rules that went in a couple years ago where you can come back as far as you want, I'm a major supporter of that rule. But I think a bad shot should either be out of bounds or have a bad lie, never both. And so one of the big things that I did was I added drop zones on 9 and 18 across the ditch. Not 9 is what I call like a spitting creek. It's a tee you could spit across. You could clear the creek spitting from the tee. So it would take an absolute shank to go out of bounds, but it's going to happen. So, you know, you got to clear that. And then 18 is a good 200 or 300 foot clear from the long tee for the MPO division. And if you hit short, you have that awkward 40-degree stance down a hill. And then my mind as a tournament director immediately goes to fairness and safety, right? Mm-hmm. If you land there and you're in bounds, you're throwing two, bad shot, bad lie, right? But if you land there, if you're out of bounds and that's your drop, and now I'm forcing you to throw from a 40-degree lie, that seems unfair. And then if it's raining or muddy, now it becomes unsafe. So basically, players that don't throw in this ditch are never going to have this problem. It's only the bad shots. But basically, you will have to clear the other side of the creek on both holes to be in bounds. So even if you hit short, you're now out of bounds. And then at that point, we will have the normal OB rules apply with our new drop zones. And that kind of gets into the real substantial changes are in the FPO division, because those two drop zones are now the FPO tees for 9 and 18.
Okay, interesting. So Jennifer, I see you nodding because you're like, you're calculating in your mind. You're going, okay, I know where he's talking about. I get it. Yep. All right. So I'm going to be throwing from there. So you've already got the wheels turning.
I'm just thinking that that sounds like very logical. I always, the double penalty, like you said, is always something that just like really sucks all the air out of you as a player. And the safety, I can think of many tournaments, you know, that we've had a lot of rain and you're on a big slope and it's definitely a safety concern. So I was nodding because I was like, yes, I agree with everything he's saying on those decisions that were made. So those sounds like great changes, and I'm sure that they will benefit certain situations next week.
Yeah. So we actually did a walkthrough with Kona Panis. We got together back in October with the Bushnell, obviously our presenting sponsor, and they brought in their two players, Paul Uliberry and Kona Panis. And it was so great to hear their perspective. I had this idea in my head, right? I've often said that to run something like this, you got to be creative, but you also can't have an ego. And
right.
I had what I thought was a fantastic idea, right? Let's use these other courses to warm up on, and they can play different holes and throw different shots. And I asked Yuli, I said, how many people do you think will do this? And he said, rounding up, probably zero. And I said, but that's a good example, right? I had to like, whatever ego, I like, okay. It wasn't as good as idea as I thought it was, right? But Kona was provided a lot of valuable information on holes that not only she struggled with, but she remembers the women struggling with. And those three holes were the two that I just mentioned, 9 and 18, excuse me, and then also hole 8, which is a big bending par 4 to the right. And so thankful that you just keeps all these stats. And we went back and we looked at it. And at the 2018 Hall of Fame Classic, hole 8 was listed as a par 4. It averaged above 5 every day.
Wow.
And there were only two birdies the entire week, one of which was a 60-foot throw-in.
Wow.
And those were both Paige Pierce and Paige Pierce. so we said, well, where can we put an FPOT here to kind of solve that problem? Well, this, you know, it's about a 300-foot drop, right? So there was no safe place to do that. So we're going to, basically, that's going to be one of the shared tees, but it's going to be an FPO par 5. But that's the old, that, you know, not different at all. And it's really not going to play any different. But, you know, the data supports that a 4 is an incredible score in that hole.
Yeah.
And it's going to score like a birdie, and a 3 is going to score like an eagle.
Right.
Regardless of whether we call it a par 3 or a par 20, right? And we had the same problems on 9 and 18. Now, we were able to kind of solve two problems at once by doing the FPOT and the drop zone. Hole 9 is a par 4. Nobody 3'd it the entire tournament. Hole 18 is a par 5. There were only two 4s the entire week.
Huh.
And I actually like the scoring separation that hole 18 provided. It was a lot of, you know, there wasn't many fours, but there was a lot of fives, a lot of sixes, a lot of sevens, good separation. But I feel that a par five on hole 18 should be eagleable. You should be able to throw two fantastic shots and catch up a shot or two coming down that last hole. So we added that tee to not only serve as the MPO drop zone, but to try to create those eagle opportunities for our FPO division. So we're really excited about those things. I mean, 8 played the hardest hole in the course in 2018, 9 played the second hardest hole, 18 played the 7th hardest for our FPO division. So we really tried to focus on those. So if you watch 2018 or you go back and watch, those are the three real substantial changes you're going to see. And then those rule differences obviously won't really come into effect for FPO because those creeks are behind those tees now. But outside of that, I mean, every single hole is going to be identical, with the exception of the incredible work the IDGC staff has done to clean the place up, right? That'll be the other noticeable difference.
Interesting. So one of the things I was going to ask you, you mentioned already that for the most part, with the exception of these three situations, the course should look very, very similar to the way it looked even 3 and now pushing 4 years ago at the Hall of Fame Classic. But has anything else changed? Meaning, has there been any, losses of trees due to storms? I know the South gets a lot of storms, just like I do in my neck of the woods. Have there been any significant losses of tree branches or, maybe the addition of a walking trail? Or is there anything like that that has in any way altered anything that you can think of?
Nothing that comes to mind. I mean, I don't know this course up and down like I do my courses in my hometown. So it's nothing noticeable, right? That doesn't mean that some tree 30 feet off the fairway fell that I don't even know
well,
about,
yeah.
Right?
There's a few trees there. So you miss one or two and it's like hard.
we had to cut out some spectator pathways.
There we go. Okay.
In the 4, 5, 6, 7 area. That is like the really, not only the thickest part of the course in terms of the woods, but also in terms of walking from tee to green,
mm-hmm.
or from green to tee, I should say, going to the next hole. actually, hole 4 alone, which is the second shortest hole in the course, is 320 foot right hand backhand hyzer, and very, very tight. And we tried to think about what happens if we have 1,000 spectators on this hole. And without exaggeration, I think it might take 30 minutes to get 1,000 people from 3's green to 4's tee. So that immediately required us to clean up some walkways. They cut out a spectator watching area on hole 4.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all, 40, 50 feet off the fairway where it's not going to affect the hole whatsoever. But then that also required us to limit how many people are following groups, how many people are allowed in the park for tickets. It's every decision is born off of another problem. Right?
Sure.
And that's kind of the thought process as we had to do all those things.
Interesting. How are you going to handle things that come up during the course of the week? For example, you just mentioned a lot of rain has fallen this week, which is the week prior to the Champions Cup. As we sit here looking at the calendar next week, there's some rain potentially in the forecast again. If the course gets inundated with rain, what kinds of things are you going to do to facilitate, play being able to occur as well as possible?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, first and foremost, the answer is always experience, right? This is not the first tournament that I've run that's had horrible weather. I remember I ran the 2018 Amateur World Championships, and we had a hole. So this was in pool play in the MA1 division where, we had 4 different pools playing the same holes and same courses. And in the 4th pool playing a hole completely flooded and was, 6-7 feet deep of water on the fairway.
Wow.
Yeah. And I remember that, Sean Sinclair, who worked at the PGA for a long time, he calls me and says, "Hey, there's no way we can play this hole." And I just said, "Hey, I trust your opinion. We'll figure it out. Cancel it." And I drove there. It was about 30 minutes later. And I got there and I said, "Yeah, this hole was unplayable." And he laughed and said, "The water has receded about 30 feet.
Wow.
And I, at that point, was like, this is unplayable. So we had to go through and find 3 rounds of scorecards and start throwing out holes, right? So things like that are always possible. And that's where, you know, my experience as a tournament director comes in. My assistant tournament director, Chuck Connolly. I mean, how many events the assistant tournament director has won the Brent Hambrick TD of the year, right? And then we're going to have, including myself, 21 PDGA staffers on site. You know, so when you combine all of that, it's always kind of a game time decision. You know, the rules allow us the chance to declare areas as relief areas, right? So if we have a large ponding area, right, it might be worth for us to go and flag or rope that real quick, because 6 hours later, that might be dry, right? Mm-hmm. And whenever I'm making a rules change or rules decision, I always fall back on one fundamental, right? The exact same lie has to play the same for every single person, right? And that gets back into controlling uncontrollables, right? I can't control the rain. I can't control water receding. I can't control water evaporating. But I can control maybe marking the area around that water, so then the entire day it plays the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's where just, you know, that's my number one piece of advice to tournament directors is really understand the rules and really understand how these situations can benefit, and always go back to that same question is this hole going to play the same the entire day if I do this, yes or no? There's a hole in my hometown of Raleigh that literally has waves from boats, you know, and I was at a tournament one time and somebody asked me, they said, well, what happens if the wave comes in and now the disc is wet and the wave goes back and now the disc is dry? And I said, you're asking the wrong question. The wrong question is, why is that not marked OB? Right? Who cares if it's wet or dry, right? You know, mm-hmm. So controlling uncontrollable situations is really the key to those situations.
Our show is turning into an awesome learning experience for TDs, I think, Grant. Like the last couple of weeks, I mean, this is all extremely helpful information for people who want to be a TD or TDs that maybe haven't thought about that. But those are that's some great advice.
Well, and so much attention when it comes to directing tournaments has to do with, you know, handling the actual players themselves in terms of the documentation and getting everyone registered and all of that. And you don't hear things like safety discussed as often as probably it should be. And I'm speaking as a person who is, I've broken my ankle in two places on a disc golf course, throwing a shot off of a tee pad that was unsafe. Now, it was still my fault. I'm the one that fell down. But the point is, that's a perfect example of a situation that a TD would have looked at that. And had that been a tournament, I have no doubt that that particular tee pad would have been modified in some way, or would have been at a minimum, they would have taken care of erosion problems around it and all of that. So it's kind of refreshing, to be honest, hearing you, Robert, talk about thinking about safety, thinking about what weather could happen and alter the course in the middle of play. Do you have any thoughts about the crowd? Meaning, are you focused solely on the players and someone else will be focused on the crowd? Or is that another thing that comes into your mind when it comes to, say, if a lightning storm comes in the middle of a round and you have to, you know, clear the course? Is that something that crosses your mind?
Yeah, it has to be, right? I mean, you know, I'm breaking my hand here, hitting wood, you know, that we're going to be okay. You know, fortunately, if this event was in the summer, I'd be much, much, much more worried, because, you know, anybody who's lived in the South in the summer, you know, it can be beautiful, and then 5 minutes later, it's literally hailing, right? This time of the year, these pop-up crazy storms, it's not that they don't happen. It's just they're extremely more unlikely, and the weather is a lot more predictable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's one thing we're going to have to keep in mind is, especially on Saturday and Sunday, we're at capacity. You know, we're expecting 1,000 people in the park Saturday and Sunday when you factor in players, media, staff, and spectators. So if we think something's coming, you know, we got to make that call 30 to 40 minutes in advance, not when it happens.
Right.
And, you know, and we're actually, today's Friday, and I'm actually going to have a call with some IDC staff this afternoon to kind of discuss that plan. You know, we've kind of got it written out. We've kind of got it in our mind what we do in those situations. But really the key is going to be that predictability, right? If there's any chance of something at all, You know, to kind of go back to our previous conversation, safety is always the number one question, right? And then let's keep everybody safe, and then we'll figure everything else later, you know, and something like that, that's potentially life altering. You know, it just, one of my favorite quotes is, it's just disc golf.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is not worth, you know, risking someone's livelihood or life or their
health.
Physical mm-hmm. Health. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, it just, we're throwing frisbees in the woods. Right. So, and that's not to discredit the incredible play and the amount of money that we're going to be playing for or the prestige of a major championship. Right. But at the end of the day, that's what we're doing. And safety is always, always, you know, 1, 2, and 3. This past weekend at Throwdown the Mountain in Florida, they had to cancel a day because of weather. And I saw the tournament director, Mike Barnett, who's a good friend of mine, just taking a lot of heat online. And I called him and I said, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for keeping our friends safe.
Yeah.
Because that's always number one.
Well, and it's hard too, because you have to make that decision, like you said, so far in advance. And we all know how storms go. Sometimes they keep on track. Sometimes they fizzle out and go to nothing. And so, you know, you have to make that decision and it may never even happen. So then you definitely get that unkind feedback sometimes. So that's a hard decision a tournament director has to make, but it's one that has to be made for everyone's safety.
I would rather be explaining to somebody why I got them off the course and it wasn't necessary, as opposed to why I did not get them off the course when something happened.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it. And for those that aren't familiar with every, you know, as I said before, there are plenty of people that have probably seen coverage of the W.R. Jackson course on YouTube. That doesn't mean you've seen the lay of the land around that course. You know, there's the International Disc Golf Center there with the Steady Ed Museum and everything. That's a relatively small structure. And beyond that, there are some gazebo structures here and there. Yeah, there are a couple of little roofs and little patio kind of areas that have a few picnic tables. But by and large, you're in a park, a large, you know, nature park right next to a lake, a large lake. And there aren't a whole lot of shelters in the area, which means your best alternative for shelter, if you do need to get off the course, is probably going to be your vehicle,
which is not close. The parking is not close.
And it's even further than it has been in the past, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, you know, because we're going to be handling so many visitors. So parking's going to be further and further away, depending on how early you arrive and what your pass allows you to get into. So, you know, there's all of those things that have to be taken into account for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's another big difference, right? If you've ever been to the Hall of Fame Classic or, the IGGC or anything like that, you know how mm-hmm. it is. You go through the gatehouse, you go down the road, and then you turn left and you're on like a mile long road to the IDGC.
Right.
That is, nobody's turning left unless you're like staff or media, right? We had to hire private shuttle companies, and people are going to be parking, players and spectators are going to be parking, you know, a mile away from the course. And then we're going to have this professional shuttle service bringing people to the mm-hmm. course, you know, and, you know, so what does that mean? That means even longer to get people, you know, back to their cars.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of details for sure.
And you're certainly not right down the street from your hotel, most likely, because you hear us refer to Augusta often. That's just because it's the biggest dot on the map that people are familiar with. The course is actually in a community called Appling, which is really more or less just a rural area almost. It's a very small town. And you're 25, 30 minutes or so from Augusta, somewhere in there, depending on the time of day and the rural highway you choose to traverse on. So, you know, even to that point, it's not like, oh, I'll just run back to the hotel for a while and wait this storm out. That's not really an option either. So it's got all the challenges. I liken it a little bit to if you've ever been to sort of an outdoor concert kind of series that's, you know, out in some kind of a big park or something, the same kind of logistical challenges and the same ways that those listening right now that expect to be out there spectating, you need to prepare accordingly. You need to prepare with, you know, sunscreen and with, you know, all of those kinds of things.
Also, tick spray, correct? The ticks there are usually a problem. Is this time of year any better?
I don't have that answer. I mean, I know up here in North Carolina, it's always in the summer, you know, June, July. I don't have that data or knowledge, mm-hmm. but it's yeah, bring it, you know, be prepared, right? You know, we sent out a email to our players and our spectators this week and was just like, hey, like, kind of FYI, you need to understand what you're getting into here. Like, our spectators, you might be walking 3 or 4 miles, right? This ain't, you know, this ain't a day for boots, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I know on the chat, I've seen a few of the ladies already say that they have found a few ticks. So for spectators going who have not ever been, the players know that ticks can be a problem there. The Rocky Mountain ticks, you know, the ones that actually can get you pretty sick. So spectators listening, please be aware that that is an issue sometimes at this golf course. So be prepared for that.
I have had Rocky Mountain spotted fever. It is not fun. Right. Not a joke.
No fun. All right. Well, that's obviously a great piece of advice. Robert, before we let you go today, because we know how busy you are, you know, any other things that you just feel like a spectator, whether they're going to be on site or whether they're going to be watching online for that matter, anything that players might want to be aware of that you just want to make sure people sort of come prepared? You know, what's the Boy Scout motto? Be prepared. Any other points of preparedness you want to make people aware of before they enjoy the Champions Cup?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to be coming as a spectator, first and foremost, read the email I sent. I know they're long. I know it's a lot of information. It was condensed as much as I could to get mm-hmm. to get all the information, right? Because it not only needs to be sent, but it needs to be retrievable later down the road. You know, we will be having 3 concession stands on the property. Our friends at the Women's Augusta Disc Golf are going to be running our 3 concession stands, and 100% of the profits from those sales will support that women's club in Augusta, which we think is really awesome. So they're going to be, and our friends at Rectech Grills, another big sponsor, is going to have all their fancy grills out on site. We're going to be cooking hot food every day for sale. And then on the actual course, we'll have water and Gatorades and snacks and that sort of thing. So that way, if you are a spectator, you don't have to walk all the way back to the parking lot if you just need some water. Saying all of that, we are encouraging and allowing people to bring personal coolers. You know, alcohol is not allowed in Georgia parks, so it would have to be a non-alcoholic beverage. But, you know, if you want to bring a cooler, I had a spectator said, hey, can I bring my cart and push a cooler around? Absolutely. Right. You know, make yourself comfortable. At the end of the day, you're there to have fun and to watch golf. And I'm not going to be that picky person that says no, buy our $3 water. Right. So, and I think that we got a lot of stuff. We really have tried to model this as much as we can after the PGA Tour. You know, we're going to have crossing guards on the holes, rope, you know, permanent ropes, gated areas for our players to where, you know, they're behind gated areas where they can mentally shut down if they want, you know, autograph zones. Things like that. So we have really, I'm a massive golf fan and really have tried to model as much of the experience as after the PGA Tour as possible. Because I think while disc golf is different than golf and we shouldn't model it, you know, letter for letter, you know, there's a lot of things they got figured out that we're still trying to figure out. So let's not reinvent the wheel here is kind of my philosophy.
Very, very good. And I want to highlight one thing you just said one more time, just to make sure it's completely clear. You mentioned the rules about alcohol in Georgia parks, no alcohol in the park, which means not just at the course. That means in that whole massive area that I just mentioned that the course and the IDGC is just a small part of. So want to be very, very clear on that. Don't want to see anybody get their weekend ruined with a citation or worse. Correct. When it comes to something that you can, you know, leave back in the hotel room and enjoy after your day of spectating is over. So want to be very, very clear on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love a beer more than anybody, but you know, the rules are in place for a reason. And, you know, and whenever I see a player drinking, I always ask them, you know, I went to a tournament one time and I had a player drink and I said, and then I made a 3 in the hole and he says, what's your score? I said, well, I guess I got a 2 since we're not playing by the rules today.
Oh, that's nice. Funny times. Well, Robert, once again, thank you so much for your time. You got a lot to get to. You got some traveling ahead of you to get down there to the course. And then, you know, Jennifer and I will be seeing you here in the very near future as we both do our preparations for this, the first major, Well, it's the first, it's the inaugural Champions Cup. It's the first of this major, which is a cool thing to be a part of. So thanks again, Robert. We wish you the best this week and hope that those storm clouds stay away as much as possible.
Fingers crossed for sure.
Thanks, Robert.
All right, brother.
Thank you both.
See ya. Well, Jennifer, this is an episode of PDGA Radio that I know I will go back and listen to more than once because there's just so much here to dissect and so much to learn from and so much to get us excited about the Champions Cup. And on that note, you've got to get going because you've got some practice rounds to play. So we're going to go ahead and get out of here, but expect some more content from the PDGA and from PDGA Radio later on in the week as we celebrate the playing of the inaugural Champions Cup at the International Disc Golf Center in Georgia. Until then, see ya.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.